Hello, and welcome to this edition of the Virginia Bioscience Podcast. I'm your host, Henry Wixon, a senior partner specializing in intellectual property issues with the law firm of Wilmer Hale in Washington, D.C., and a member of the Board of Directors of the Virginia Biotechnology Association. This edition of our podcast features a presentation made on the 19th of August, 2008, to the Virginia General Assembly's Joint Subcommittee on the Biosciences by Mr. Patrick Kelly, Vice President of State Government Relations for the Biotechnology Industry Organization in Washington, D.C. The Biotechnology Industry Organization represents more than 1,200 biotechnology companies, academic institutions, state biotechnology centers, and related organizations across the United States and in more than 30 other countries. Biotechnology Industry Organization members are involved in the research and development of innovative healthcare, agricultural, industrial, and environmental biotechnology products. In his presentation, Mr. Kelly briefed the subcommittee on the current status of the global bioscience industry, discussed why states are competing so aggressively for biotechnology investment and jobs, and where Virginia ranks in various indicators compared to other states. His slides are available online at the subcommittee's website, https://dls.state.va.us/biotech.htm, under the Meetings and Materials tabs. The Virginia General Assembly's Joint Subcommittee on the Biosciences is chaired by Senator Janet Howell and Delegate Mark Sickles. Our podcast lasts approximately 40 minutes. For more information about the biosciences in the Commonwealth of Virginia, please visit us on the web at www.vabio.org. Thank you, and we hope you'll enjoy this edition of the Virginia Bioscience Podcast.
Our first invited guest speaker today is Patrick Kelly. I met Patrick recently at his office in Washington. He is the Vice President for State Government Relations at the U.S. BIO, or BIO, extraordinarily dynamic organization that continues to grow and really providing a platform for the nation's most innovative companies. Thanks for coming down here and joining us today.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to join you here this afternoon, or this morning, I'm sorry. We had the opportunity to meet with Delegate Sickles a week and a half ago, and talk about the mission of this joint subcommittee, what Virginia can do to really improve its standing within the bioscience industry, what the rest of the country is doing. And I think that the presentation that I'm going to give you today is going to be a little bit about what's going on outside of Virginia, give you some perspective about what other states are doing, some national trends, some things that we've just announced in a report that we've just released, and then to commit to work with this subcommittee and our affiliate, Virginia Biotech Association, to basically chart a path towards accomplishing objectives that this committee identifies as important for the Commonwealth to achieve moving forward. So with that, I will get quickly into this. Obviously, there's been significant interest across the country in the growth of the bioscience industries. Nearly every state in the U.S. now has a plan of some kind in place, either through their governor or through their legislative bodies, to create, attract, grow, retain bioscience industry capacity in their respective states. Every state has a very different perspective on how to do that. They have very different resources available to them to accomplish their objectives. Their universities are obviously a significant component of that capability. So every plan is slightly different, and there's no one set program that's going to basically be the cure-all for all 50 states. Every state has to look at their own strengths and weaknesses and then chart a path based on those and what they want to accomplish. And by the way, this PowerPoint presentation is in front of you. I hope you have copies of it in front of you. So, The industry faces numerous policy challenges across the country. Today we're going to focus primarily on the early stage challenges to growing a bioscience industry, and they are unfortunately almost entirely wedded to the availability of capital, and that is dollars going in either into company formation or dollars going into infrastructure to spin out technology. But capital formation is really kind of the first and foremost challenge that this industry faces moving forward. That is not to say that there are not other challenges for the industry. Obviously, we have intellectual property protection issues, tech transfer with our university colleagues, bioethics concerns. Drug safety and reimbursement are obviously a major focal point now for the U.S. Congress. And ag research and industrial biotechnology are significant and growing components of this industry and have their own challenges and needs as well. BIO is, as was said in the introduction, a national trade organization for this industry. We have approximately 1,200 member companies from all over the country and actually internationally that belong to the organization. We also work very, very closely with a network of state affiliate organizations, and in Virginia, the Virginia Biotech Association is our designated state affiliate here in the U.S. There are now 42 states in the United States with a dedicated bioscience trade association up and running. When we started the organization back in 1993, I believe there were 12. And actually, Virginia was probably in the early teens, probably 14th or 15th in the formation of a dedicated bioscience association. So the objective of these associations, BIO and our state affiliates, is to help this industry, help the companies that are forming grow and work with the state governments to accomplish their objectives to grow the economy of the state. We work, obviously, in state advocacy, federal advocacy, regulatory affairs, business development issues, and as well as general communications issues with the media, with the general public, with lay audiences, even religious groups on some issues. So we have a kind of a lot of things that we try to do. We try to do all of them as best we can, and sometimes we could do things better. But it's the role of an association is, I think, an important component to the success of a state is to have a dedicated and vibrant bioscience association like VA Bio here, and we're pleased to have Mark to work with and have worked with him for a number of years. I have included, and also you should have a copy of, a report that we just released at the Bio Annual Convention in San Diego in June. And this is kind of the Bible, not to demean the Bible, but this is a kind of the work plan for the bioscience industry at a state level in the U.S. And we do this every 2 years, basically charting what the states are doing to support bioscience industry development. Obviously, the objectives of the report are to kind of track the trends in the biosciences, examine specific programs that have been put in place in a variety of areas that are significant to growth factors for the industry, and its research and development, the availability of venture capital driving investment into the bioscience industry, patents, technology transfer, how that apparatus works in a particular state, and then various workforce issues relating to educating people to move into this industry. Unless you have an indigenous workforce, or it's kind of a two-edged sword, if there's not an indigenous bioscience community, your best and brightest students accept their degrees and go to California or Massachusetts or, God forbid, Maryland. But it's kind of a two-edged sword. You need the researchers. You need the technology coming out. You need the researchers coming into an industry that's going to be here in the state of Virginia. And then we look at we delve a little bit into kind of the best practices that we identified across the country and kind of set a general recipe for succeeding in the industry. Patrick did a pretty good job of defining the biosciences according to what the commission had defined earlier. We use the term biosciences in this report as opposed to biotechnology. There's a lot of discussion about what biotechnology means. Is that just the use of biological processes? Does it include medical devices? Does it include nanotechnology? Our definition does include all of those things, and I think our definition of the biosciences is very similar to the definition of biotechnology that Patrick cited earlier. Basically, it includes in the blue box, agricultural feedstocks and chemicals, medical devices, drugs and pharmaceutical development, research testing in medical laboratories across all of the continuums for human health care, for animal health care, for agriculture, even for now the industrial and bioenergy applications of the industry. I don't expect you to read this, but basically we predicate all of the data generated in this report on the Bureau of Labor Statistics North American Industry Classification System. This is the only way we can get data that basically can be easily corroborated to form the basis for this report. These are the NAICS codes that basically are included in the report. So if we have to basically cite a federal document or a federal labor statistics that are there, they are based on these NAICS codes. And a lot of states use these codes as well to basically try to figure out what their industry looks like in their particular state. Breaking out the industry nationally, essentially it breaks out like this. You've got essentially the smallest portion being the agricultural component of the industry, followed by the drugs and pharmaceuticals section, then the medical device and diagnostic section, and then the research testing and medical laboratory section. Actually, that's where you capture the blue piece of pie, is where you capture most of the companies in this industry. Are captured in that space, approximately 22,000 companies. These are the small companies that have just spun out of a university, that are just starting, and they really don't qualify as having a human drug candidate in the clinical trial process, so they get captured in the kind of the research component. But you can see that that is by far the largest section with 22,000 companies, but approximately almost 500,000 employees in the biosciences. Virginia, what I did was in the back of this report, if you do open it up, there is a CD-ROM, and that it contains a profile of all 50 states, what the industry looks like in that particular state based on the codes that we pulled. Virginia was very reputable position in the biosciences, approximately 800 companies, 18,000 people employed, and I'm sure we can debate whether or not this included all the statistics that are available, but for our purposes, we had to basically rely on the BLS data. An average industry salary of about $62,000 per year per employee in the biosciences in Virginia, and between 2001 and 2006, a growth rate of approximately 6.1%, which actually very closely mirrors the growth rate for the entire industry in the United States in that time frame. And we came through a pretty hellish downturn in the economy, 2001 to 2003. So we've actually seen some pretty steady growth. We're not exactly in a robust economic cycle right now. We've seen a little bit of downturn. Obviously, you've got a 14% decrease in the medical device community in the state, and a little small decline in the drugs and pharmaceutical section. But for the most part, huge uptick in the research testing component of the state really buoyed the rest of the industry statistics. This is the national trend line for the biosciences. That is essentially percentage of growth based on the percentage of growth for the private sector, the U.S. private sector as a whole in that intervening 2001 to 2006 time period. 2006 is the last year that we actually have full data sets available, so that was our baseline. But we're basically, the industry's grown about 5.7%. The overall private sector grew about 3%. So we are actually trending above the national employment trends the industry is in the United States. A variety of data that were kind of drawn out in this study, the most important of which were the fact that it's a very broad industry, it's a very dynamic industry, but it is a significant employer in the bioscience space, and it has a significant multiplier impact for every job created in the biosciences. Approximately 5.8 jobs are created in support of that one job. So if you look at our total employment impact of approximately 1.2 million people in the United States, multiply that by 5.8, you've got approximately 7.5 million people employed in the U.S. As a result of this industry. So if you apply the 5.8 multiplier, whether it's applicable to Virginia or not, multiply 18,000 by 5.8, you've got a pretty significant workforce that's here as a result of the bioscience industry in the state. The salary data, again, this is general data nationwide. If you look at the top of the list of sections that we included here, you have drug and pharmaceuticals, the highest paid on a national average. Research testing and medical laboratories is a little bit down. I'd use my laser to point, but I don't think it points on the TVs. But if you take the average salary within the whole bioscience sector, it's approximately $70,000 per year per employee, which is not far beyond the average here in Virginia, which is $62,000. If you look at the total salary average for the private sector, it's approximately $42,000. So you're $20,000 above the national average in this particular industry sector. And this is the thing that's driving a lot of legislative bodies to try to grow this industry, because it's a high-skill, high-wage industry that allows you to basically keep your best and brightest students that come out of your academic institutions here in the state, rather than losing them to Maryland, North Carolina, Massachusetts, California, what have you. It's a high-skill, high-wage job, and legislative bodies tend to like that. This is kind of where the leading states in the country are across the subsectors. North Carolina is the only one of the neighboring states that came across as a major player in the drugs and pharmaceutical sector here. Maryland did not land on this list of having a top 10 state or top 12 state in any of the geographic or the industry regions that we studied. This is kind of the metropolitan concentration across the country. You see where the largest components are in California and the Massachusetts area. But Washington, D.C. area does have a significant concentration of bioscience, and that captures Northern Virginia, Maryland, D.C. area. You see a significant cluster down in North Carolina. So the whole mid-Atlantic region, you know, from North Carolina all the way up through New Jersey, is very, very significant in the biosciences. And I think there's opportunity for any state in that region to really capitalize on the growth of the industry in that whole particular region. As I said, the academic component of this industry is inseparable. I mean, this industry does not succeed without strong academic research as kind of the foundation for growing the industry. We've basically borne that out with every study that we've ever done. Without an active, vibrant research hub or institution in your state, your likelihood of growing a significant bioscience cluster are not good. So academic bioscience R&D is an important indicator for how well or how successful a state's going to be on growing its industry. We've seen significant increases in the bioscience investments made by academic institutions. We've seen significant growth in the number of degrees that are coming out of these institutions in the biosciences. Venture capital investment is actually growing. Venture capital tends to follow academic research very, very closely. They know where opportunities lie, and they are very, very savvy about what's going on at academic research centers. Virginia, unfortunately, did not rate in our academic bioscience chart, but the state of North Carolina and Maryland did, with the amount of expenditures going into the biosciences. And this indicates that Maryland, right there in the middle, Maryland and North Carolina right next to each other, approximately $1 billion going into the biosciences, and I think this is 2006 or 2006 data, $1 billion apiece going into bioscience research at the academic institutions in their states. This is Virginia's specifics on the academic components. I think, you know, very admirable. You rate definitely top half in just about everything, and close to top 10 in several of the categories that we track. So, again, for a very respectable showing by the state, that should not be, it should be, you know, a significant component to a growth plan for the biosciences in the state. NIH funding is also a significant indicator of how well a state's going to do in its academic research. If it's pulling in large NIH grants, it's probably spinning out technology at a pretty nice clip as well. And again, North Carolina and Maryland do a very good job of leveraging NIH-related expenditures. Obviously, Maryland's got a little bit of an advantage because NIH is in Maryland. But these are also obviously, you know, close to $1 billion commitments from NIH going into those states are significant reasons that those states are successful in helping to grow the biosciences. Occupational employment, again, another one of the areas we studied. North Carolina factors here. Maryland factors on the kind of the per capita component of this category. So again, Maryland and North Carolina a lot of jobs around the biosciences, a significant component of their employment sector in their states. Number of degrees that are going out in the biosciences, and again, North Carolina rated here significantly, and I believe North Carolina, Maryland, and the District of Columbia also factored into the kind of the per capita component of bioscience degrees being handed out. Venture capital is this industry does not go without significant capital investment. We actually saw a very good capital market in 2007 for the industry. We actually got up to over $11 billion in venture capital invested in the bioscience industry, which actually got us back to where we were in 2000 before we had that significant downturn in the economy post 9/11. So venture capital is coming back to the biosciences. It is a significant advantage to those states where you do have an indigenous venture capital or angel investment community. That tends to drive investment in companies in that particular state. States that do have large venture capital communities tend to go poaching. They like to go out to states outside of their area. They look at technology. They say, if you come move to California, we've got a nice lab spot set up for you. And by the way, here's $100 million to underwrite your phase one research program. That's kind of hard to say no to. And so the venture capital community tends to like to be where they're making their investments. So growing an indigenous venture capital or angel investor community is something a lot of states are looking at. Maryland in particular, they passed a bill to try to accomplish that. If you look at venture capital investment again, North Carolina factored prominently nationally. Maryland did not. Actually, one of Maryland's biggest weaknesses, their perceived weaknesses, is the fact that they don't have an indigenous venture capital community, and we're losing companies to North Carolina, losing companies to Massachusetts, and have tried to basically stop that with a legislative fix that I'll talk about just a little bit later. I apologize for these charts. It's all in the report. I just thought that it's pretty interesting to illustrate kind of what the rest of the country is doing. These are the top five states in venture capital. North Carolina factored here. It's kind of the top five go vertically. They don't go horizontally. So you have yes.
It's our tradition to ask questions during these meetings. So Dr. Bannon.
Okay, certainly.
Thanks very much. I'll hold off if you want, but these things are kind of, I've got them, maybe other folks have.
Okay.
It might be, where is Virginia on the 1 to 50?
As far as in which metric? On venture capital or?
Overall.
Overall, we actually did not purposely rate the states 1 to 50 in this project, because that immediately draws fire, because there are so many subjective criteria for ranking the states. I will say that basically based on the data that we collected, you are probably in the top 20, just outside the top 10. But I could go through the data and give you an exact count based on our metrics.
But I think we have not seen Virginia yet on any.
Not on the, but these are all the top 10. These are coming up as the top 10 states.
One more question.
Yes, sir.
Help me understand what makes Maryland a poor angel and North Carolina a good angel. What are the things that make venture capital available?
Well, I think the business community and the banking community in North Carolina has been a significant component to why that state has a leg up, I think, in the venture capital side of things, on the financial services side of things. Maryland does not have that indigenous community in their state. They have a lot of research going on, a lot of technology spinning out of the University of Maryland, Hopkins, NIH, but there was no indigenous financial community in the state of Maryland to support kind of taking those companies and keeping them, you know, taking the ideas and the technologies out of those generators and keeping them in the state. They tended to be going out to Massachusetts or North Carolina or California, for that matter.
But in one of your earlier slides, you showed that Maryland was doing real well on the research side,
right?
But not so well in the turning that into jobs,
right?
So, yeah, okay. So Maryland is probably exporting a lot of.
They're exporting technology, and they're probably not capitalizing on jobs they could have. I don't think they're exporting jobs per se,
yeah.
But I think they are not capitalizing on opportunities that they do have.
Is that one of the reasons they passed this refundable tax credit to try to turn that around?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Delegate, please.
She
came in, I apologize for being late. And I don't know your background, and I apologize, but either you and or the secretary, are you seeing foreign venture capital availability flowing in to other states that is not flowing into Virginia, for instance, from some of the sovereign wealth funds? And again, are we also seeing the possibility that some of the patents being developed may end up under foreign control?
Well, given the state of the economy, and I don't want to step on Secretary Chopra's response to this, but I think foreign investment in this industry is significantly increased in the last 2 years, significantly increased, and that's a direct result of the value of the dollar. So we have seen significant investment from foreign countries. They tend to want to actually take the technology out, not so much invest here. They tend to want to spend the technology out and take it back to Singapore, Ireland, Malaysia, China, Pakistan, India. They're looking at repatriating a lot of their talent that they've shipped over here to get educated and start in the industry, and repatriating and starting companies in their countries, and they tend to be met with significant investment opportunities if they do decide to take companies back there.
But I can ask our secretary to do as well. Is that not a real systemic risk that we face? Because I was recently out in California, and I understand the university system right there are just being overwhelmed with opportunities for foreign venture angel investors coming from a lot of this sovereign wealth money. And again, the control and ownership of the evolving patents is one of the concerns. Am I correct or not?
I would suggest, I think, that you're generally in the right direction. What we're tracking more frequently is foreign pharmaceutical companies, mostly European, are increasingly investing $10-plus million dollars each in research centers of excellence at our universities. So most recently, Harvard announced a $15 million partnership, and there are several others. What we're seeing is these multi-million dollar European pharma investments are occurring in institutions, unfortunately not in Virginia. We're seeing much more of that activity in Massachusetts and in California. So this notion of industry-funded R&D, whether it be foreign-based or domestic, there's increasingly more of that coming to the universities in larger chunks. We're just not as competitive in that area.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, I was going to add a bit of additional information on Obama's question. I think in the case of North Carolina, and this was pointed out in the early Biotech Commission reports that Secretary Shull may, in fact, point out in his presentation. In the case of North Carolina, they actually put together a state-supported seed and early-stage fund, which we've seen over and over again is a very important component of really attracting private sector investment. I think by doing that, they tended to then accumulate more private sector venture capitalists than other funds that began to congregate in the research triangle area, et cetera. I would suggest that probably Maryland has not taken that step or did not take it nearly as early as North Carolina did, and that may be one of the reasons that they have not seen that kind of success.
Okay, I have another question, but I'll let you get back to your report and we'll.
I'll wrap up fairly quickly. There was a discussion about patents and what states are good at spinning out patents. This is where Maryland really does have a leg up on at least this region because of the research that does go on there at NIH, at University of Maryland and Hopkins. They are in the top 10 category with regard to patents spun out around the biosciences. Very quickly wrap up here. These are the top five states in each of the categories that we tracked with regard to generating patents in those particular spaces. Maryland is there, North Carolina is not. So North Carolina may be capitalizing on creating companies, but they're not spinning out the early stage technologies as quickly as Maryland is. But again, that could be a lost opportunity for Maryland. Factors for success for the industry, and this is kind of a tried and true, and it hasn't changed a lot in the last 10 years that we've been tracking it. It's basically engaged universities are absolutely important and probably the most central foundation for the growth of the industry in a particular state. Building entrepreneurial cultures and trying to encourage venture capital investment is a significant component to the success of the states. As available capital for all stages of the business cycle. Discretionary R&D funding, both state and federal dollars, are the states leveraging everything they can Are they trying to leverage as much NIH money as they can? Do they have discretionary state funding going into the academic research centers? Generating workforce and talent pool. The industry can't grow unless there's an indigenous workforce here. You could have all the money in the world, but if there aren't the people to hire to come in and run the companies, then the companies have to go elsewhere. Access to specialized facilities and equipment is an important thing. I think the state, the Commonwealth, has made a significant investment in facilities in the last 5 or so years, and stuff coming online now that I think is going to help you significantly improve in that category. Supportive business tax and regulatory policies. I think, you know, generally it's a pretty supportive business climate in the Commonwealth. I don't know if there's particular programs that you could implement that would specifically address the bioscience industry, but you know, there's always room to improve. And patients in a long-term perspective, and that actually for us, being on the industry side of things and the advocate side of things, is probably the hardest thing to communicate, is the need that this is not a short-term play. This is not something that the legislature is going to be able to approve a fund tomorrow, and then next year we're going to be able to basically see huge growth as a result of those investments. This is a long-term play, and it needs a long-term and patient perspective. Very recent state initiatives. I'm sure all of you have heard about the $1.1 billion program that Governor O'Malley announced at our convention in June. Yet to receive legislative approval, so you know, it sounds good on a soundbite. Whether he sees $1.1 billion or not remains to be seen. Massachusetts did get legislative approval on their billion-dollar life science initiative. They are in the process now of implementing that. That's approximately $500,000 or $500 million to over 10 years. And all four of those first four bullet points are 10-year programs. Those are not one-year investments. These are 10-year programs borne out over that period of time. But Massachusetts is trying to improve their academic infrastructure, their research infrastructure, bring in workforce and talent, and then also help companies grow. With that $1 billion, a $3 billion cancer research initiative just coming online in Texas. They wanted to be to basically cancer research what California is to stem cell research. So, and I think it's a very good play for them given their natural talent in that particular category. Kansas had a $500 million Economic Growth Act passed in 2004. Kansas was nowhere on the bioscience map up until about 2003, 2004 when the legislature decided that Missouri was having their way with kind of talent and technology in the Midwest, and that they wanted to really begin to capitalize on that, and passed with legislative approval a $500 million 10-year program to attract and grow the biosciences in that state. A lot of it is predicated on year one growth. Is I think they made an initial commitment of $50 million. And said that any subsequent growth in the program was contingent on growth or success using that initial $50 million in property taxes generated in the bioscience community, as well as income taxes generated by bioscience employees. They basically, all those taxes generated were going to go straight back to funding that Economic Growth Act. So you were basically going to eat what you kill type scenario for funding mechanism. Other less costly initiatives, the Maryland Biotechnology Investment Tax Credit was something passed in 2005 in Maryland to try to drive angel capital and venture capital into small biotechnology companies in Maryland.
Mr. Kelly, this was the program that people were camping out on the sidewalk in Annapolis to get in line for.
Yes. Well, there were systems. There are two funds available, but this is one of the ones where basically they have certain capitalization, and after that, the money's gone. I forget what the capitalization was this year for the 2008 cycle, but it's not significant. It's not insignificant. It's $15 million or so per year, and then after that, it's capped and it's gone. So you have to camp out early, get your applications in, or make your investments, and hopefully get your tax credits. North Carolina, interesting. Delegate Byron mentioned the tobacco settlement dollars. North Carolina has done a very good job through their Golden Leaf Foundation, which is the agency that's administering their tobacco settlement fund, at allocating their resources towards bioscience infrastructure development and education. The BTEC is the Biotechnology Training and Education Center that has just come online at NC State's Centennial Campus for training workforce in the bioscience, primarily biomanufacturing jobs in the state. And they just announced or in the process of completing a biodiesel research institute also in North Carolina with Golden Leaf with tobacco dollars. So again, it's not state money; it's tobacco settlement dollars, but it's driving bioscience research in North Carolina. And then Kentucky passed what we thought was a pretty innovative bill to help small companies. Was basically matching funds. If you've secured a federal Small Business Innovative Research grant, SBIR grant, the state will match you one for one for that grant to help you stay and leverage those federal research dollars in the state of Kentucky. So again, innovative program, not a lot of money because the SBIR grants are limited in scope, but it's a way to help small companies get up and running. Go ahead, Secretary.
This may be a comment and a question. If you can go back to that, I don't think you go back.
Sure.
I wonder to what extent we have a marketing problem versus a policy challenge, and I'm sure it's a mixture of both. But as you go down that list, we don't call it a biosciences initiative in the sense that we don't have all these fish together under one umbrella. But if you look at each of those components, we have our version of that. So in the $1.4 billion package that we just signed, a good portion of that will go towards, heck, a lot of it is, I see Mark in the room, 50 some odd million or whatever the math came out to be for the bio facility down in Carilion. If you look at if you break down both the higher ed bond package and the 06, whatever that was, 05, 06, and then the most recent bond initiative, and you summed up what portion of that's going to life sciences, we may not be that far off in terms of a massive capital investment. We also have an investment tax credit. It's only $3 million, I think, or $4 million. I don't remember. Our tax folks can tell us, but it's not dedicated to biotech, but certainly it's an angel investor tax credit, and it's been well received, and it's been around for almost a decade. We too, thanks to Delegate Byron's leadership, have a portion of our tobacco money going into a biofuels effort in Danville and some others, $37 million, some portion of that for this. So it's funny when you go, and we also have some matching programs with CTRF and some others. We have a lot of these policy items. If we put $26 million into SRI, mostly to attract research and development in life sciences, almost exclusively to attract research in life sciences. Not all of these things get counted in these statistics. And it's shame on me and our team for not doing a better job stitching together the story and saying this is the comprehensive story of all that's been done. It wasn't under one piece of legislation.
Mr. Secretary, could you provide that for us at the next meeting, maybe give a whole summary of how what we're doing in the state now?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly what I'd be delighted to do, and I think what I'll do is I'll look at it now, and I think Pat, myself, and Tom Morris, we sort of have a sub-cabinet on research and development activities. I might suggest that we would more formally give you that overview, because, and it'd be fascinating, not to bring you back, but it'd be fascinating to juxtapose stuff that's buried in the budget that may not be as visible, but is actually pretty dramatic, and to see the impact. I just make a general statement. Maybe that was a comment or a question. The question to you would be, to what extent are there ways to uncover pockets of things that are being done? In other words, where do the... This is a great example of what the association could do to help us stitch together. I guess, I don't know, your reaction to how we uncover...
Well, again, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think a lot of it is marketing. I think a lot of it is you have these programs here, and I'll just skip to this slide here, where basically these are the programs that we indicated as growth programs for a particular state, and where Virginia, not ranked, but did you have a program in that particular area? And the answer was yes to almost all of them. The profile, and I think that also is in front of you, is the Virginia profile that's in this report. Every single program that you mentioned is here. It's basically cited here, the Higher Education Fund, the Coastal Energy Research Consortium, the SRI International, the Philip Morris Facility, Covance coming in. All that stuff is here. I think the question is whether or not you market it as aggressively as you possibly could, and either you can be shameless with these things, and because it is a national and an international audience that you're marketing to.
If I can, and I'd really like to address this to our secretary again, if I could, are we, and part of your presentation, I hope you would include also our university system, and indeed are we providing and creating the educated body that we need in master's and doctoral level students and graduates that we need to really service this industry, or indeed are we importing them, and if so, what are your thoughts there?
Speak up. great question. I don't have an assessment as to whether or not we're producing less than we should. I would imagine that the glib answer to that is, of course, we should always produce more. But frankly, our statistics aren't as bad as you might think when it comes to the ratio of our graduate students and PhD students that are coming out that have benefited in the life sciences area. I think the one area that is particularly interesting as we look forward is that more and more of the research activity is collaborative. So you could be a mechanical engineer, but you might actually be a terrific candidate for some kind of medical device of the future. So we wouldn't count you as a bio graduate student, but you might actually be critical. So this notion of measuring sort of this future of collaboration, the intersection of technology and medicine, is sort of a huge growth area that we stand poised to grapple with. And I believe our universities, especially our research institutions, have done a pretty good job mapping towards producing some of those collaborative activities. And one of the topics we might want to have a future discussion on is how our universities are building collaborative research activities that would support the bio industry. I would venture off the top of my head, I can assure you that VCU, UVA, and Tech, and frankly, and Mason, all four have collaborative R&D programs that are linking bio, IT, engineering, and it's spinning out some pretty creative research students.
Delta Bannon.
Actually, this is a real productive discussion for me. I would love to see your slide with the denominators, the number of years for each of those things, because I think that would put a little reality and help thing. And I'm not asking you to do that. I'm just saying that it would help put a little reality on some of the marketing issues versus the beef kind of thing.
Right.
And another part of that would be what, and I think that's inherent to somebody else's question, what revenue streams, what approaches did these various states take to do this? I just have one question. From your perspective, I know it's not easy maybe, but what are Virginia's strengths or pluses versus their opportunities or minuses on that big picture slide, the blue slide that you had that had all the key points on it?
I went the wrong way. Let's get back to that. So on this slide,
just the real, you know, where
I think huge strength is academic research. I mean, with Tech, Mason, VCU, and UVA here in the state, you've got not only do you have a strong academic presence, you have a very geographically dispersed geographic presence, which is not something North Carolina can say. In North Carolina, it's all concentrated in the RTP area, so you run into legislative obstacles. For you know, legislators who are in Asheville or other parts of the state, are like, okay, this is nothing for me. It's all in RTP area. So I think a diverse, geographically dispersed and diverse academic research strength is a significant strength for the Commonwealth. I think you've got some facilities coming online. The Philip Morris campus here is phenomenal. I'm not sure if, you know, with regard to the Howard Hughes Center in Northern Virginia, because it's not a whole lot of people know a lot about what's going on there. I think you do have some decent facilities and infrastructure to support early stage industry development. Talent pool, obviously, Northern Virginia is rife with really smart and bright folks, whether that's true down here in Richmond or not, or if the workforce is a concern, I need to know a little bit more. But from an outside perspective, looking in, obviously the academic research, I think capital may be an issue. I think opportunity to fund, company startups and keep company startups here in Virginia may be an issue and a challenge for Virginia, particularly given the amount of money that other states are allocating towards bringing companies in. I think the legislature has a long-term perspective on this. I think you're surrounded by states that understand it, and you know that you need to compete. And I think that's a net strength for the Commonwealth. So, again, I think there are a variety of strengths that the state has. It's not a bleak picture by any means. I think there are some things that you could probably improve on competing with what's going on in Maryland. And what Secretary Joper said, maybe it's marketing. Maybe it's the fact that you've got all these things available, and you've just need to capitalize on marketing it a little bit better.
Thank you very much. I think you're a wise presenter since you put the legislature in the
Senator Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to wanted to go back to what Delegate Perky was talking about, and I guess on your list there would be under workforce and talent pool. One of the things that I've observed, and I'm afraid I'm not wrong, but I hope I am, is that over the last 4 years, the United States has been a huge beneficiary of the brain drain. We've attracted the best and the brightest from around the country. They came here, they got educated, and they stayed. Now it seems that we're having trouble getting them into the country in the first place to study, and more alarming, having visited some of the countries like Taiwan, they're going home,
yep.
And they're staying home. What kind of recommendations do you have for a state like Virginia so that we can build our own and be self-reliant?
Right. The H-1B visa program, which is a lot of the research talent came into the U.S. on post 9/11, it got very, very tight and very difficult to get these visas to come in. As a result, you do see fewer highly trained, educated visa holders coming in to do research here, as well as you see this repatriation back to their home country. They all want to come here, get educated, learn the business, learn the science, and then take what they've learned back to their home countries. In many cases, they've left family there. Their quality of life, once they bring back their talent and their knowledge, becomes tremendous in their home country. I think that the root of the problem is we need to do a better job of generating that level of talent at a very early stage. And that gets into the K-12 education programs. We've got to try to increase our education efforts in the STEM disciplines, the science, technology, engineering, math disciplines, starting at the grade school level, to make sure that we're spinning these kids out that are interested in the sciences, and the biosciences in particular, from our perspective. That's about the only way we're going to be able to, again, to stem this reverse brain drain that we're now experiencing.
Any other questions? Delegate Vanderhoff.
Sure. Thank you very much. Further to that comment, I think one of the ways that we can do this is the way that providing internships, so that whether you are from the United States, from Virginia, or coming from overseas, if the education is paired with a summer apprenticeship or a summer internship in a company that has invested in the academic institution, you might have more buy-in because you have people who are then tethered to a group of people and an industry, and they see a future and a connection when they graduate, in the same way that law firms attract the best and the brightest out of law school over the summer and have then a commitment and a connection to those people when they graduate. We could do a better job, I think, both with our foreign and our own students. Here in Virginia, I mean, part of what we talk about is parts of Virginia where people grow up and leave. If we had a partnership where people could internship in the field, in a company, while they were going to school in that discipline, and create those partnerships, I think we'd have more success in that. That may be something we could build toward.
Any final comments?
No, I appreciate your time. I know I went a little bit long, but we are here committed to working with the subcommittee, with the Virginia Biotech Association, with the department, to do anything we can to bring whatever experience and knowledge and information we have to make you successful at what you're trying to accomplish.
Thank you for your help.
Absolutely.
We look forward to working with you.
Thank you.
Appreciate this very comprehensive report.
Thank you for downloading the podcast of the Virginia Biotechnology Association. For more information, please visit us at www.vabio.org.